They talked and argued and often contradicted one another, while Dorcas listened and asked questions. He was, he told them, an inventor, especially of things to do with electricity. Back in the early days, when the gnomes first began to tap into the store's wiring, a good many had been killed. They'd found safer ways to do it now, but it was still a bit of a mystery, and there weren't many who were keen to get close to it. That's why the leaders of the big families, and even the abbot of the stationery himself, left him alone. It was always a good idea, he said, to be good at something other people couldn't or didn't want to do. So they put up with him sometimes wondering out loud about the outside, provided he wasn't too loud. "I shan't remember it all," he sighed. "What was the other light, the one you get at closing time? Sorry, I mean bite." "Night," corrected Maskelyne. "It's called the moon." "Moon," said Dorcas, rolling the word around his mouth. "But it's not as bright as the sun?" "Strange, really. It'd be more sensible to have the brightest light at night, not during the day when you can see anyway. I suppose you've no idea why, have you?" "It just happens," said Maskelyne. "I'd give anything to see for myself." He leant closer. "I reckon," he said, "the Arnold Brothers S-1905 put us in the store to find out things, to learn about it. Otherwise, why have we got brains? What do you think?" "People keep talking about Arnold Brothers S-1905, said Grimmer. "No one actually says who he is, though." Dorcas leant back. "Oh, he created the store in 1905, you know, the bargain basement, consumer accounts and everything between." The green light on the thing went off. Its little spinning cup vanished. It made a faint whirring sound, such as a machine would make to clear its throat. "I am monitoring telephonic communications," it said. "Well, that's nice," said Grimmer. "Isn't that nice, Maskelyne?" "I have urgent information to impart to the leaders of this community. Are you aware that you are living in a constructed entity with a limited life?" "Fascinating," said Dorcas. "All those words. Vitally important, I communicate information of utmost significance to community leaders concerning imminent destruction of this artifact," intoned the thing. "I'm sorry," said Maskelyne. "Could you try that again?" "You do not comprehend?" "I don't know what comprehend means." "Evidently, language has changed in ways I do not understand." Maskelyne tried to look helpful. "I will endeavour to clarify my statement," said the thing. A few lights flashed. "Big fella store, him go bang along plenty soon enough, chop chop," said the thing hopefully. The gnomes watched one another's faces. There didn't seem to be any light dawning. The thing cleared its throat again. "Do you know the meaning of the word destroyed?" it said. "Oh, yes," said Dorcas. "That's what is going to happen to the store in 21 days. Overhead, the humans plodded through their slow and incomprehensible lives. Below, so that the din was muffled by carpet and floorboards into a distant rumbling, the gnomes hurried along the dusty passageways. Dorcas stopped so suddenly that Granny Morky cannoned into the back of him. "Look," he said, "what do you think gnomes should do, eh, if the store is destroyed?" "Go outside," Maskelyne began. "But most of them don't even believe the outside really exists. Even I'm not quite sure about it, and I have an extremely intelligent and questioning mind. There isn't anywhere to go. Do you understand me? There's masses of outside, only if you believe in it. No, it's really there." "I'm afraid people are more complicated than you think. But we ought to see the abbot anyway. Dreadful old tyrant, of course, but quite bright in his way." Maskelyne had always thought that Torrit looked old, but the abbot looked so old that he must have been around to give time itself a bit of a push. He walked with the aid of two sticks, and a couple of younger gnomes hovered behind him in case he needed support. His face was a bag of wrinkles, out of which his eyes stared like two sharp black holes. The abbot was helped to his chair and sat down slowly while his assistants fussed around him. Then he leant forward. "Ah," he said, "Del Icatessen, isn't it? invented anything lately?" "Not lately, my lord," said Dorcas. "My lord, I have the honour to present to you..." "I can't see anyone," said the abbot smoothly. "Must be blind," sniffed Granny. "And I can't hear anyone either," said the abbot. "Be quiet," Dorcas hissed. "Someone's told him about you. He won't let himself see you." "My lord," he said loudly, turning back, "I bring strange news. The store is going to be demolished." The abbot permitted himself a faint smile. "Dear me, and when is this terrible event likely to occur?"
"In 21 days, my lord."
"Well, then," said the abbot in a kindly voice, "you run along now, and afterwards tell us what it was like."
"My lord, this is no..."
The abbot raised a gnarled hand. "I'm sure you know a great deal about electricity, Dorcas, but you must know that every time there is a grand final sale, excitable people say, 'The end of the store is nigh,' and strangely enough, life goes on." Masklin felt the abbot's gaze on him. For someone who was invisible, he seemed to be attracting considerable attention.
"My lord, it is rather more than that," said Dorcas stiffly. He nudged Masklin in the ribs.
"Now," he said.
Masklin stepped forward and put the thing down on the floor.
"Now," he whispered. "Am I in the presence of community leaders?" said the thing.
"About as much as you ever will be," said Dorcas.
The abbot stared at the box. "I will use small words," said the thing. "I am the flight recording and navigational computer. A computer is a machine that thinks. I use electricity. Sometimes electricity can carry messages. I can hear the messages. I can understand the messages. Sometimes the messages go along wires called telephone wires. Sometimes they are in other computers. There is a computer in the store. It pays humans their wages. I can hear it think. It thinks, 'No more store soon, no more payroll, no more accounts.' The telephone wires, they say, 'Is that Grimthorpe Demolition Co.? Can we discuss final arrangements for the demolition? All stock will be out by the 21st.
"Very amusing," said the abbot. "How did you make it?"
"I didn't make it, my lord. These people brought it here."
"Which people?" said the abbot, looking straight through Masklin.
He rose hesitantly to his feet. "I am a tolerant gnome. You speculate about things outside, and I do not mind. I say it is good mental exercise. We wouldn't be gnomes if we didn't sometimes allow our minds to wander. But to insist that it is real, that is not to be tolerated. Little tricksy toys!" He hobbled forward and brought one stick down sharply on the thing, which buzzed. "Intolerable! There is nothing outside and no one to live in it. Life in other stores. Audience concluded. Be off with you."
"I can stand an impact of 2,500 tons,
said the thing smugly, although no one took much notice.
"Away, away!"
shouted the abbot, and Masklin saw that he was trembling. Some of the lesser stationery ushered them hurriedly through the doorway. It was done quite expertly, without any of them actually touching Masklin's people or even looking them in the face. Several of them scattered hastily away from Torrit when he picked up the thing and held it protectively. Granny Morky's temper, which was never particularly long, shortened to vanishing point. She grabbed the nearest monk by his black robe and held him up inches in front of her nose. She poked him violently in the chest.
"Do you feel my finger?" she demanded. "Do you feel it? Not here, am I?" "Indigenous!" said Torrit.
The monk solved his immediate problem by giving a little whimper and fainting.
"Excuse me," said a quiet voice behind them.
They turned
and saw one of the stationery standing there. He was young and quite plump, with curly hair and a worried expression.
I wanted to talk to the, outsiders, said the little man carefully.
He bobbed a curtsy in the direction of Torrit and Granny Morkey.
Well, said Masklin. That, thing that spoke, said the stationery.
Do you believe it?
I think it can't actually tell lies, said Masklin.
What is it exactly?
Masklin shrugged.
I don't know. We've just had it a long time. It says it came with gnomes from a long way away, a long time ago. We've looked after it for generations, haven't we, Torrit?
The old man nodded.
My dad had it before me, and his father before him, and his father before him, and his brother at the same time as him, and their uncle before them.
The stationery scratched his head.
It's very worrying, he said. The humans are acting very strangely. Things aren't being replaced in the store. There's signs we've never seen before. Even the abbot's worried. He can't work out what Arnold Brothers S-1905 expects us to do. So,
he bunched up his robe, untwisted it hurriedly, and went on.
I'm the abbot's assistant, you see. My name is Gerda. I have to do the things he can't do himself. So,
well, what? Said Masklin.
Could you come with me? Please.
Gerda led them deeper into stationery territory. Here and there were stacks of what Masklin was told were books. He didn't fully understand what they were for, but Dorcas obviously thought they were important.
Look at them, he said. Powerful lot of stuff in there that we could find useful. And the stationery guard it like
something well guarded, said Masklin.
Right, that's exactly right. They keep looking hard at 'em. Reading, they call it.
There was a whir from the thing in Torrit's arms, and a few lights lit up.
Books are repositories of knowledge, it said. It is vital that you obtain books.
Stationery, hold on to 'em, said Dorcas. Unless you know how to read books properly, they inflame the brain, they say.
In here, please, said Gerda, shifting a cardboard barrier. Someone was waiting for them, sitting stiffly on a pile of cushions with his back to them. It was the abbot. He didn't turn round. Masklin prodded Gerda.
It was bad enough just now, he said. Why are we doing this again?
Gerda gave him a look which seemed to say, trust me, and scurried away. The abbot spoke.
Who is in charge?
Masklin looked at Torrit, but everyone else looked at him.
Well, he said, me, I suppose, just for the moment.
That's right, said Torrit. Just for the moment, I'm putting him in charge, see, because I'm the leader.
The abbot nodded.
A very wise decision, he said.
Torrit beamed.
Stay here with the talking box, said the abbot to Masklin. The rest of you, please go. There will be food brought to you. Please go and wait.
When they'd left, the abbot turned round.
Close to, he was even older than he'd looked before. His face wasn't just wrinkled, it was one big wrinkle.
Your name, I believe, is Masklin.
Masklin couldn't deny it.
I don't understand, he said. 10 minutes ago you said I didn't even exist, and now you're talking to me.
There is nothing strange about it, said the abbot. 10 minutes ago it was official. Abbots have been denying there is anything outside for generations. I can't suddenly say they were all wrong. People would think I've gone mad.
Would they? Said Masklin.
Oh, yes. Politics, you see. Abbots can't go changing their minds all the time. The important thing about being a leader is not being right or wrong, but being certain. Of course, it helps to be right as well, the abbot conceded.
He leant back and resumed.
Supposing that I, in there, had said I believed you, people would have thought the old boy had gone off his head, the abbot chuckled, and then they'd have panicked. Well, of course, that would never do. We must hold the gnomes together. You know how they bicker at every opportunity.
That's true, said Masklin, and they always blame you for everything and say, what are you going to do about it?
You've noticed, have you? It seems to me that you have exactly the right qualifications for being a leader.
I don't think so.
That's what I mean.
You don't want to be one.
I didn't want to be abbot.
He drummed his fingers on his walking stick and then looked sharply at Maskelyne.
You don't believe in Arnold Brothers Est 1905, do you? I've seen him, you know, when I was a boy. I climbed all the way up to consumer accounts by myself and hid, and I saw him at his desk writing.
Huh?
He had a beard.
Oh. The abbot seemed to be making up his mind about something. Then he thumped on the floor with his stick. Gerda appeared as if by magic.
Take Maskelyne away and educate him a little, said the abbot, and then both of you come back here. But leave that black box, please. I wish to learn more about it. Put it on the floor.
Maskelyne did so. The abbot poked it with his stick.
Black box, he said. What are you? And what is your purpose?
I am the flight recorder and navigation computer of the starship Swan. I have many functions. My current major function is to guide and advise those gnomes shipwrecked when their scout ship crashed here 15,000 years ago.
Who are these gnomes of which you speak? Said the abbot.
All gnomes.
Is that your only purpose?
I have also been given the task of keeping gnomes safe and taking them home.
Very commendable, said the abbot.
He looked up at the other two.
Run along, then. Show him a little of the world, Gerda, and then I shall have a task for both of you.
It was a long walk through the busy underfloor world. They found the stationery could go where they liked. The other departments didn't fear them because the stationery weren't a true department. There were no women and children, for one thing.
So people have to join, said Maskelyne. We are selected, Gerda corrected. Several intelligent boys from each department every year. But when you're a stationery, you have to forget your department and serve the whole store.
Why can't women be stationery, then, said Grimmer.
It's a well-known fact that women can't read, said Gerda. It's not their fault, of course. Apparently, their brains get too hot with the strain, you know. It's just one of those things.
Fancy, said Grimmer. Maskelyne glanced sideways at her. He'd heard her use that sweet, innocent tone of voice before. They went up a slope and out through a gap into the big emptiness of the store itself. It was night, closing time. But there were bright lights in the sky, except that Maskelyne had had to start learning to call it the ceiling.
This is the haberdashery department, said Gerda. Now, do you see the sign hanging up there?
Maskelyne nodded. It had huge red letter shapes on a white banner.
It should say Christmas Fair, said the stationery. That's the right season. It comes after summer bonanza and before spring into spring fashions. But instead it says final reductions. We've been wondering what that means.
This is just a thought, said Grimmer. It's only a small idea, you understand. I expect big ideas would make my head explode. But doesn't it mean, well, everything is finally being reduced?
Oh, it couldn't mean anything as simple as that. You have to interpret these signs, said Gerda.
What do all the other things say? Said Maskelyne.
Well, that one over there says everything must go, said Gerda. But that turns up every year. It's Arnold Brothers Est 1905's way of telling us that we must lead good lives because we will all die eventually. And those two over there, they're always there too.
He looked solemn.
No one really believes them anymore. Silly superstition, really. I mean, I don't think there's a monster called Prices Slashed who walks around the store at night seeking out bad people. It's just something to frighten naughty children with.
Gerda bit his lip.
There's another odd thing, he said. See those things against the wall? They're called shelves. Sometimes humans take things off them. Sometimes they put things on them. But just lately, well, they just take things away.
Some of the shelves were empty.
Have you ever seen Arnold Brothers S 1905? Maskelyne asked. The abbot did once.
When he was young, he climbed all the way up to consumer accounts. He doesn't talk about it, though.
Maskelyne thought hard about this as they walked back. He had serious doubts about Arnold Brothers S1905.
After all, if he had built the store for gnomes, why hadn't he made it gnome-sized?
But he thought it was probably not the time to ask questions like that. They found the rest of the group near the Abbot's quarters. Food had been brought up for them. Granny Morkey was explaining to a couple of baffled stationery that the pineapples weren't a patch on the one she used to catch at home. Torrit looked up from a hunk of bread.
"Everyone's been looking for you two," he said. "The Abbot fella wants you."
The old man was sitting very still, with the thing on his lap, staring at nothing.
"Sir?"
said Gerda after a while.
You wanted to see us, sir?"
"Ah," said the Abbot. "Young Gerda, isn't it?"
"Yes, sir."
"Oh, good."
The Abbot nodded gently.
"Oh, yes. You there.
The young man with the spear."
"Me?"
said Maskelyne.
"Yes. Have you spoken to this thing?"
"The thing? Well, in a way. It talks funny, though. It's hard to understand."
"It has talked to me. It has said..." He glared at the thing in his lap. "It has said that it has heard Arnold Brothers Est-1905 plans to demolish the store. It is a mad thing. It talks about stars. It says we came from a star flying. But I wonder to myself, is this a messenger from the management sent to warn us? Or is it a trap set by prices slashed? So,"
he thumped the thing with a wrinkled hand, "we must ask Arnold Brothers Est-1905. We will learn his truth."
"But, sir,"
Gerda burst out,
"you're far too... I mean, it wouldn't be right for you to go all the way to the top again. It's a terrible, dangerous journey."
"Quite so, boy. So you will go instead. You can read human, and your boisterous friend with the spear can go with you. Now be off, and may bargains galore go with you."
"Who's bargains galore?" said Maskelyne as they went out.
"She's a servant of the store," said Gerda, who was still trembling. "She's the enemy of the dreadful prices slashed, who wanders the corridors at night with his terrible shining lights to catch evil gnomes."
"It's a good job you don't believe in him, then," said Maskelyne.
"Of course I don't," agreed Gerda.
"Your teeth are chattering, though."
"That's because my teeth believe in him."
The Abbot sat back in his chair.
"Tell me again," he said, "about how we came here. You mentioned a colour. Mauve, wasn't it?"
"Marooned," said the thing. "Ah, yes, from something that flew. A galactic survey ship," said the thing. "But it got broken, you said. There was a fault in one of the everywhere engines. It meant we could not return to the main ship. In the early days, we managed to communicate with humans, but the different metabolic rates and time sense eventually made this impossible. It was hoped originally that humans could be taught enough science to build us a new ship, but they were too slow. In the end, we had to teach them the very basic skills, such as metallurgy, in the hope that they might eventually stop fighting one another long enough to take an interest in space travel."
"Metallurgy."
The Abbot turned the word over and over. "Metallurgy. The urge to use metals. That was humans, all right." He nodded.
"What was the other thing you said we taught them? Began with a G."
The thing appeared to hesitate, but it was learning how to talk to gnomes now.
"Agriculture?" "That's right. Agriculture. Important, is it?"
"It is the basis of civilization."
"What does that mean?"
"It means yes."
The Abbot sat back while the thing went on talking. Strange words washed over him, like planets and electronics. He didn't know what they meant, but they sounded right. Gnomes had taught humans. Gnomes came from a long way away, from a distant star, apparently. The Abbot had seen the stars in his youth. Every year, around the season of Christmas fair, stars would appear in most of the departments. Of course, they weren't out all the time, so presumably there was a big storeroom somewhere where the stars were kept. The thing seemed to agree with this. The big room was called the Galaxy. It was somewhere above consumer accounts.
"She can't come," said Gerda.
"Why not?" said Maskelyne.
"Well, it's dangerous." "I'm coming," said Grimmer. "What danger is there anyway? Only this price slasher and Arnold Brothers Est 1905 himself," said Gerda nervously.
"Well, I'm going to come anyway."
All right," said Gerda. "But you mustn't lag behind, and you mustn't get in the way."
He gave Maskelyne a desperate look.
"You tell her she mustn't get in the way."
"Me? I've never told her anything." The lifts only went as far as kiddies' clothes and toys, but the Clothians were a friendly people who'd adapted well to life on a high floor and always welcomed travellers.
"They don't even come down to use the food hall," said Gerda. "They get everything they want from the staff restroom. They live on tea and biscuits, mainly, and yoghurt."
"How strange," said Grimmer.
"They're very gentle," said Gerda, "very thoughtful, very quiet, a little bit mystical, though. Must be all that yoghurt and tea."
The Clothians gave them a guide to take them through the outlying regions of the underfloor. It was almost like being outside. Faint breezes blew the dust into grey drifts. There was no light, except what filtered through from odd cracks. In the darkest places, the guide had to light matches.
"Where are we going?" said Maskelyne.
The little Clothian pointed forward, bowed, and hurried away. Gerda led them up through a narrow crack in the ancient floorboards into the emptiness of a passageway. And there, the moving stair. Maskelyne watched it hypnotically. Stairs rose out of the floor, squeaking eerily as they did so, and whirred up into the distant heights.
"Wow," he said. "The Clothians won't go near it," said Gerda. "They think it is haunted by spirits."
"I don't blame them," said Grimmer.
"Oh, it's just superstition," said Gerda.
His face was white and there was a tremble in his voice.
"There's nothing to be frightened of," he squeaked.
Maskelyne peered at him. "So, what do we do now?" Gerda tried to speak slowly, but his voice began to go faster and faster of its own accord.
You know the Clothians say that Arnold Brothers S-1905 waits at the top, you know, and when gnomes die..."
Grimmer looked reflectively at the rising stairs. Then she ran forward.
"What are you doing?" said Maskelyne. "Seeing if they're right," she snapped. "Otherwise we'll be here all day."
Maskelyne ran after her. Gerda gulped and scurried after both of them. Maskelyne saw her run towards the rising bulk of a stair, and then the floor below her came up, and she was suddenly rising, wobbling as she fought for balance.
The floor below him pushed against his feet, and he rose after her, one step below. "Jump down," he shouted. "You can't trust ground that moves by itself."
Her pale face peered over the edge of her stair.
"What good will that do?" she said. "Then we can go and talk about it."
She laughed.
"Go where? Have you looked down lately?"
Maskelyne looked down. He was already several stairs up. The distant figure of Gerda, his face just a blob, screwed up his courage and jumped onto a step of his own. Arnold Brothers 1905 was not waiting at the top. It was simply a long brown corridor lined with doors. There were words painted on some of them, but Grimmer was waiting. Maskelyne waved a finger at her as he staggered off his stair, which mysteriously folded itself down into the floor.
"Never, ever do anything like that again," he shouted. "If I hadn't, you'd still be at the bottom. You could see Gerda was scared out of his wits."
At this point, Gerda's stare rolled him almost to their feet. They picked him up.
"There," said Grimmer brightly. "We're all here, and everything's perfectly all right, isn't it?"
Gerda stared around him. Then he coughed and adjusted his clothes.
"I lost my balance there," he said. "Tricky, these moving stairs, but you get used to them eventually."
The three gnomes crept forward past the rows of doors.
"Does one of these belong to Prices Slashed?" said Grimmer.
Somehow the name sounded far worse up here. No, said Gerda. He dwells among the furnaces in the basement. He squinted up at the nearest door. This one is called Salaries, he said. They reached the end of the corridor. There was another door there, with glass in the top half. Gerda stared up at it.
I can see there's words, said Grimmer. Read them out.
I'd better not look at them, she added sweetly, in case my brain goes bang. Gerda swallowed. They say, Arnold Brothers, Est 1905, D.H.K. Butterthwaite, General Manager.
Huh?
He's in there, she said.
The door's not shut, look. Want me to go and see, said Masklin helpfully.
Masklin walked over to the door, leant against it, and pushed it until his arms ached. Eventually, it swung in a little way. There was no light inside, but by the faint glow from the corridor through the glass, he could see he was entering a large room. The carpet was much thicker, like wading through grass. Several metres away was a large rectangular wooden thing.
Where are you, Arnold Brothers S-1905? He whispered.
Some minutes later, the other two heard him calling softly. They peered around the door.
Where are you?
Hissed Grimmer.
Up here,
came Masklin's voice. This big wooden thing. There's sticking out bits you can climb on. There's all kinds of things up here. They waded through the deep pile of the carpet and waited by the wooden cliff.
It's a desk, said Gerda loftily. There's lots of them in furnishing. Amazing value in genuine 100% oak veneer. What's that other thing up there?
He looked where she was pointing.
That? It's a chair. Swiveled finish for that executive look.
There was a clinking noise by her head.
Sorry, Masklin called down. It took me a while to hook them together.
Gerda looked up at the heights and the gleaming chain that now hung down.
Paper clips! I never would have thought it.
When they clambered to the top, they found Masklin wandering across the shiny surface, prodding things with his spear.
Well, Arnold Brothers S-1905 doesn't seem to be around, Masklin said. Perhaps he's gone to bed or whatever.
Masklin found a cable as thick as his arm winding off across the top of the desk. He followed it. Gerda walked over to a pile of paper and started reading the top sheet by the dim light coming in from the corridor. He read slowly in a very loud voice.
The Arnco Group, he read, incorporating Arnco Developments UK, Arnco Schultz Hamburg AG, Arnco Airlines, Arnco Publishing, and Arnco UK Retailing PLC.
Gosh, said Grimmer flatly.
There's more, said Gerda excitedly. Arnco UK Retailing PLC, including Bonded Outlets Limited, the Grimethorpe Dye and Paint Company, Quick Clean Mechanical Sweepers Limited,
Something wrong?
Arnold Brothers Est 1905,
Gerda looked up.
What do you think it all means?
Bargains galore, preserve us.
There was a light. It skewered down on the two of them, white and searing, so that they stood over a black pool of their own shadows. Gerda looked up in terror at the brilliant globe that had appeared above them.
Sorry, I think that was me, said Masklin's voice from the shadows. I found this sort of lever thing, and when I pushed it, it went click. Sorry.
Ha 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 ha, said Gerda mirthlessly. An electric light, of course. Ha 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 ha. Gave me quite a start for a moment.
Masklin appeared in the circle of brightness and looked at the paper. Gerda pored over the print again.
Notice to all staff, he read. We are all aware of the increasingly poor financial performance of the store in recent years. I'm sure our sorrow at the closure of Arnold Brothers, which, as you know, was the foundation of the Arnco fortunes, will be lessened by the news of plans by the group to replace it with an Arnco Super Saver store in the Neil Armstrong shopping mall. To this end, the store will close at the end of the month,
and will shortly be demolished to make way for an exciting new Arnco leisure complex.
Gerda fell silent and put his head in his hands. Masklin took Grimmer gently by the arm. "I think he wants to be alone for a..." He stopped. Grimmer was staring over his shoulder. He turned and looked out through the glass part of the great door into the corridor beyond. There was a shadow out there, human-shaped and growing bigger.
"What is it?" she said. Masklin gripped his spear. "I think," he said, "it may be Price's slashed." They turned and hurried over to Gerda. "There's someone coming," Masklin whispered. "Get down to the floor quickly."
"Demolished," moaned Gerda, hugging himself and rocking from side to side. "Everything must go. Final reductions. We're all doomed."
"Yes, but do you think you could go and be doomed on the floor?" said Masklin. "He's not himself, you can see that," said Grimmer. "Come on," she added, "upsy-daisy." She lifted him up bodily and helped him towards the rope of clips. Masklin followed them, walking backwards with his eye on the door. He thought, "He has seen the light. It should be dark in here now, and he has seen the light. But I'll never get it off in time, and anyway it won't make any difference. I don't believe in any demon called Price's Slashed, and now here he comes. What a strange world."
He sidled into the shade of a pile of paper and waited. He could hear Gerda's feeble protests down around floor level suddenly stop. Perhaps Grimmer had hit him with something. She had a way of taking action in a crisis. The door drifted open very slowly. There was a figure there. It looked like a human in a blue suit. In one hand, he held a metal tube. Light shone out of one end. His terrible light, Masklin thought. The figure came closer. Masklin peered around the paper. He looked up into a round, red face, felt the breath, saw the peaked hat. This man had his name on his hat. Masklin squinted and made out the shape of the letters. S-E-C-U-R-I-T-Y. He had a white moustache. The man started to walk around the room. Something outside the door started to roar. It was almost a lorry noise. It didn't seem to worry the man, who just pulled the door open and looked out. There was a human woman in the passage. She looked quite elderly, as far as Masklin was any judge, with a pink apron with flowers on it and carpet slippers on her feet. She held a duster in one hand, and with the other she was... well, it looked as though she was holding back a sort of roaring thing, like a bag on wheels. It kept rushing forward across the carpet, but she kept one hand on its stick and kept pulling it back. While Masklin watched, she gave the thing a kick. The roaring died away as security started to talk to her. To Masklin, the conversation sounded like a couple of foghorns having a fight. Masklin ran to the edge of the desk and half climbed, half fell down the chain of clips. The other two were waiting in the shadow of the desk. Gerda's eyes were rolling. Grimmer had one hand clamped firmly over his mouth. "Look," said Masklin to Gerda's frightened face, "you're not going to go on about doom again, are you? Otherwise, we'll have to gag you. Sorry." "Promise?" "Okay. You can take your hand away."
"It was Bargain's galore," hissed Gerda.
Grimmer looked up at Masklin. "Shall I shut him up again? He can say what he likes as long as he keeps quiet. It'll probably make him feel better. He's had a bit of a shock."
"Bargain's galore came to protect us with a great roaring soul sucker."
"That's nice. Now, how do we get out of here?" Some searching behind the filing cabinets found a crack in the floorboards just big enough to squeeze through. Getting back took half a day, partly because Gerda would occasionally sit down and burst into tears. But at last, they came back to the stationery department. Just in time. Granny Morky looked up as they were ushered into the abbot's bedroom.
"He says he's dying."
The abbot lay among his pillows. He was clutching the thing in two thin claw-like hands. Gerda knelt down by the bed.
"You're not going to die, are you, sir?" he said.
"Of course I am. Everyone is. That's what being alive's all about," whispered the abbot. "Did you see Arnold Brothers Est 1905?
"Well, Gerda hesitated. "We found some writing, sir. It's true. It says the store will be demolished." "That means the end of everything, sir. Whatever shall we do?"
"You will have to leave," said the abbot.
Gerda looked horrified. "But you always said that everything outside the store could only be a dream."
"And maybe I was wrong. That young man with the spear, is he still here? I can't see very well."
Masklin stepped forward.
"Ah, there you are. This box of yours."
"Yes," said Masklin.
"Told me things. Showed me pictures. Store's a lot bigger than I thought. There's this room they keep the stars in. It's called the Universe. We used to live in it. I think Arnold Brothers Est 1905 is telling us to go back there."
He reached out and gripped Masklin's arm.
"I don't say you're blessed with brains, but you're the kind who sees things through. Take them home. Take them all home."
He slumped back onto the pillows and shut his eyes.
"But leave the store, sir," said Gerda. "There's thousands of us, old people and babies and everyone. Where can we go, sir? Sir?"
Grimmer leant over and felt the old gnome's wrist.
"Can he hear me?"
said Gerda. "Perhaps, but he won't be able to answer you, because he's dead."